That's, I think, when we realized how much greenwashing there was around the concept of cotton and how much brands were just abusing it. And that's when we started becoming anti-cotton and leaning into sustainability.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. And you are going to love this one. Okay. Don't tell anyone, but I recorded this interview with Brian on a day where I was feeling shattered. And I was like, oh, I really hope this guest fails to turn up. I know it's horrible to say, but it is true. And then I got chatting to Brian before we hit the record button. I was like, this is an awesome person who knows so much. I am so glad he turned up. I'm so glad we're doing this podcast. And you are going to love listening to it. So be ready. There's a good one coming up. Now, if you're a regular listener, you'll know I like to give a little shout out to listeners who get in contact and who say nice things about us. Well, I've got someone who's reviewed the show to do a shout out to today. A huge thank you to Keeper Jack from the UK, who put a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts for us. He says, I'm assuming it's a he, sorry, they say, real stories about real challenges, a great listen if you're working in or around e-com, some fantastic takeaways from some great business builders. Each ep gives me a little insight into what it takes to build a successful e-com business. Keeper Jack, thank you so much for that. I really appreciate, as do the rest of the team. And if you're thinking, wow, I'd love to hear myself read out at the beginning of one of those podcast episodes, then all you need to do is to do us a review. Go to ecmp.info/review to find out how to leave a review that we will pick up. And you never know, you might be read out in the next few episodes. Okay, enough of review time. What is my amazing guest going to be talking to you about? Well, they're going to be talking about, I guess, two key things. One is their product creation philosophy, which is all around creating a stellar product, first and foremost. That would make a good episode on its own. But then he's also sharing how you go about scaling a brand in this day and age. What does it take, with some amazingly brilliant advice on doing it all? So that would make a good episode too. And then when we get to the top tips, we get deep into how to track your analytics. There's a whole like a little extended section in the top tips about juicy analytics insight. So make sure you listen to the end of the episode so you get that too. But yeah, you're in for a treat here, everybody. Enjoy. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500, yes, 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook. And now to introduce our special guest. Brian Marville is the founder of apparel business Worn, where he's on a mission to dismantle America's relationship with commodity cotton basics and fast fashion. Founded in 2018, they sell via their Shopify store and wholesale channels and are now a 7-figure business. Hello, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Really excited to talk to someone who's trying to kill off fast fashion. That is always good news to me. So how did you start on this journey? How did you end up in the e-commerce space?
I like that you said it that way, kill off fast fashion, because that is what you're trying to do, right? You can't just, it's not just taking share, it's changing behavior. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it is that type of relationship. The way I got started is kind of accidentally. The background at a high level is I worked in ad agencies on the strategy side in New York for 12 years. Worked on a lot of very big brands, Uber, Capital One, a bunch of others. And what I learned in that period of time is that if you're not solving a problem for your consumer, you're not solving a problem for your company. And companies would come to an ad land all the time and say, oh yeah, I really want to change this impression. And I said, well, the product doesn't really live up to that. And your ability to solve a problem in that world only goes so far. And so we started working with startups on an equity exchange, which was really cool. It was a really cool opportunity for both parties. We would get sort of like an inroads to new products that people hadn't really heard of that were in seed stage. And they were getting access to just big brand thinking and creative that, you know, typically people wouldn't get at that stage. And working with Founderside and just watching these people try and solve the variety of problems they were solving, their interest in their consumer and their product and that kind of obsession, I just thought was really admirable. And it was also something that drew my attention. So after working with them for a while, I decided to put my money where my mouth was. And I debbed out my first company. It was a company called Wet Socks. And it was a very small Amazon brand. We basically made frictionless socks for getting in and out of a wetsuit in cold water. I was living in Manhattan and would get up very early and go surf in Long Island. So I was spending a lot of time in a wetsuit, and the company actually ended up expanding out into like 15 different products. We'd like basically introduced wetsuit accessories and base layers. So we had wetsuit, like neoprene underwear and neoprene gloves and all these different things that just weren't being used, expanded them into hunting and fishing, and professional divers picked them up. It was a really cool process. All of those products, I don't know how much you know about surfing in general, but you know, it's like a $17 billion industry that's $16.5 billion for the t-shirts, and not that many people actually do it. So even less are in wetsuits. So it was a pretty niche brand, but a great one. And we sold that last year, and I'll talk a little bit later how that actually set up the shoulders of Worn. But that was the start. And then we said, what kind of product could we build that would actually scale outside of that, you know, super specific product niche? I said, well, we've spent a lot of time with technical fabrics. People really love these features. What could we do in the sock market to introduce something that is part of the larger US sock market? And we looked at it, and I went out and bought some of the best-selling, like brand new, big name brand, you know, these cotton socks in the market. You know, we don't say the B word at Worn, and I don't want to throw them under the bus, but I bought a pair of very popular give back socks and went for a run in them and blew a hole in them in the first run. And I was like, oh, well, maybe there's space in replacing like some of these cotton everyday socks. Learned a little bit more about cotton and ultimately learned about the negative environmental footprint and also its negative moisture management. So I thought, well, what's better is merino, but it needs to be softened a bit. It needs some elasticity improvements. Can we create that if we spin our technical fabrics that we've been using in this other product for so long with merino? Like, is that possible? And it turns out a year and a half later that it was possible. There was a lot of trial and error. But when we introduced that first product, it was called AeroWool. And the first products were, you know, it's a performance enhanced merino that managed moisture, was super soft, lasted five times longer than cotton. I was like, well, this is a new idea. This is a bigger idea. This is different than what we were talking about. We sold the other company and launched Worn.
And you said out how you discovered the other brands that were doing the cotton piece and finding that cotton is not the greatest fabric in the world, both performance-wise and in terms of its footprint. Had that occurred to you whilst you were in wetsuit land? You know, because you hear quite a bit about neoprene not being the greatest sustainable fabric. Had that fed into your decision to go super sustainable too?
I'll be completely honest with you. It hadn't occurred to me in neoprene land because I was trying to fix a very specific problem. And there was a happy accident that when you used the frictionless socks, the life of the actual wetsuit increased exponentially because you weren't pulling and tugging and tearing it the whole time, right? So like these frictionless socks actually made you need fewer wetsuits, which was great, but that was not the intent. And when we went over and started designing the first performance enhanced merino, we opted out of cotton because cotton can carry as a staple fiber 10 times its weight in water. I don't know if you ever heard like the hiking phrase cotton kills, but what happens is, you know, people always think their feet sweat, and that's not actually the case. Like, yeah, your feet sweat a little bit, but cotton absorbs a ton of water, holds it up next to your skin, and then you get cold and clammy. So as a first layer, it doesn't work very well. And if you're hiking and you're out in the outdoors, it can cause hypothermia, all that type of stuff. So we avoided it for that context and a durability context. When we started researching it and realizing that it took 20,000 liters of water to produce one raw kilogram of cotton, that it was utilizing 16% of the world's pesticides and only had 3% of the output. That's, I think, when we realized how much greenwashing there was around the concept of cotton and how much brands were just abusing it. And that's when we started becoming anti-cotton and leaning into sustainability. Like, we had created an ultra-sustainable fiber, which was great, and we could say that. But we didn't intend to kind of point out a negative until we realized just how negative it was.
So it was very much a finding a better pair of socks first from a performance, a longevity, a use case scenario, and then the, oh, wow, there's a pretty major impact here we can have on the eco side of things as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And to get to that point, I think that's actually the birth of like our design mantra, right? It's performance sustained. It can't just be a performance product and it can't just be sustainable. I love that there's a lot of brands out there that are trying to be sustainable and change their supply practices. But if it comes at any cost to the actual performance of the product, it comes at the cost of adoption and longevity. And one, that just creates a negative association with sustainability in general. And two, you know, greenwashing really expedites that and exaggerates that concept. But if you have a product that outperforms and follows the proper sustainability practices, I mean, you've really won on two fronts. And I think at this stage, like, companies are just responsible both to their customers and the planet to design that way. We didn't set out to do one first. We just always held performance as an absolute. And when you add sustainability to that concept, it makes it a little bit more difficult, but it is possible to achieve.
Two things I want to say. The first one is, I love what you're saying about it's got to be a performing product, because if a product is bad and unusable, if, you know, you buy the pair of socks, they break the first time out, or you buy the pair of socks and they're uncomfortable or the seams are in the wrong places or whatever else, and you don't wear them very often, then that is an unsustainable product, no matter what you've made it out of, because it's not getting the use. And in the world of apparel, the whole point in, you know, in sustainability is about reducing the amount of carbon that goes into each time we wear that piece. So I think, you know, it makes so much sense. You've got to have the performance to be able to call yourself sustainable. And then I also think about, actually, some of the standout sustainable brands are the ones who've created a product like you have that is better than the incumbent and is also sustainable. So here in the UK, we've got an underwear, underarm deodorant brand. I'm trying to say, we've got a deodorant brand called Wild, who are a refillable deodorant. So they've removed 90% of the waste, or some large percentage of the waste from it. But the thing about their product is, for most people, it's the best deodorant you've ever used by a massive, massive margin. So consumers may come to it for the novelty, they may come to it for the correct green claims, but they stick around because the product is good. And I think that is hopefully a piece we're going to move more and more into over the next 10 years, of the brands that really stand out are the ones who get both bits right, the performance, which is fundamental to sustainability, in my opinion, and that sustainable piece where they're taking that long-term view. Is that something you're experiencing? You're clearly, you know, you're being a very successful business. Is that something you're experiencing as you're adding product line after product line?
That is something we've experienced, and it's exactly what I'm talking about. I think that consumers know, and, you know, I'm speaking directly to your audience here, not necessarily the broader consumer market, but consumers know that there's a whole lot of BS in the apparel world and in the marketing world. And it's almost overbearing to this point to hear the claims and read 15 pages and do the best. They're not going to do it, right? Because to them, it's either BS and they need it, or it's BS and they don't need it. So they're making choices. Like, we're seeing a swing back to making choices based on value, in the sense of a quality product that lasts a long time that I can trust. I mean, we're talking like basic relationship questions you need to have with your consumer. And that should be where your mindset is from the get out. If you're starting a company now and you're like, oh, we're the most sustainable peanuts, like, it's too late. Okay, like, that ship is sailed and it's over. You're right back to product. And in some ways, sustainability has become exactly what it should have been, which is table stakes, right? Like, it should have been table stakes all along. It was not. And now it is in the best possible way. But that's a lot from like internal policing and operations, or like other brands policing other brands and calling each other out. Like that's all in the embedderment of the actual sustainability aspect. But you're never going to get to have that conversation if your product isn't stellar. And so consumers shouldn't have to choose between stellar and sustainable. It's up to us to start with that product and make sure it meets that goal from the get-out. Otherwise, you're just doing, you're handicapping yourself in the sense that like down the road, you're going to have to fix it. And you might not be able to, like the model might not work anymore. So now's the time.
So if we've got a stellar product, how do we get people excited about it? Because there are many, many stellar products out there. There's probably people listening who have a stellar product but aren't managing to get it to the market. How did you turn your brilliant sock product into a seven-figure business? What's the next thing we've got to get right?
Yeah, well, I would say don't do what I did. I'd say, you know, there's so many different things. And again, catering specifically to this startup audience and the business owner audience, first advice is go slow and keep your first job and work at night and get the business to where you're producing enough inventory that it can sustain itself and you're not taking massive loans to do it. Your inventory is your first employee. You need to be able to pay for that first. Second, then you become the second employee and you break off. And I say these things because ultimately they're going to de-stress your P&L down the road. And you owe it to yourself if you ever want to grow to not be caught between those two concepts. And so you can kind of come out and you can do that thing where you spend a bunch of money. Like, look, if it was circa 2017 and CPMs were $9 or whatever it was, and you had a $150 shoe, you can spend money on Facebook, make money on net new, and it's all going to be great. But that's also no longer the case. The competition came. Facebook's gaming the algorithm. You know, they're wildly overrepresenting conversions. That concept of scaling, the first thing I would tell you to do is not think about scaling. Think about getting it perfect and build a small hot fire, because you can add pieces to a small fire. If you build a giant bonfire and you try to keep it running, you're going to run out of gas, right? You just don't have the operational intensity to do it. So forgive yourself, forgive your ego, forget all the startup bullshit and run your business, and you will have a much better chance at survival.
I love that, Brian. I think that's such a great answer, because we are in a very different world to the one we were in 5 years ago in terms of how the e-commerce space is operating. And it's about getting those basics right, making the right decisions. And I think you've just given everyone some brilliant advice there. So looking forwards now, what have you got coming up at Warn that's getting you excited? What's on the radar?
Yeah, so the fabrics that we dipped out, first one was called Aero Wool. It's a performance-enhanced merino where we spin organic merino with different technical fibers depending on its use, but predominantly to enhance moisture management. And so we spun those together and created a knit product, which was all the socks lines were based on. We have been able to expand that into cut sew. And so we're going to be introducing, we've done a beta version, but next year we'll be introducing at scale our men's briefs, tees, long sleeve tees, and hooded tees. And that sounds like, oh, wow, you're going out and you're expanding, you know, all this into all these things. You just said go slow. This is a note. Like, we spend a lot of time devving a next generation fiber that had to meet tons of qualifications. What's nice about devving a cut sew fiber is once it's devved, you can make it briefs, you can make it a tee, you can make it whatever. And suddenly you get to add 8 products, but you're producing in your supply chain. You're pulling from one area. You're pulling from one sort of master fabric, one level of control, and you're not introducing 5 suppliers at once, even if you're introducing 5 new products. So I just want to make sure to touch back on that point. That has me and the team excited. I think that, you know, we kind of viewed ourselves early on and we would joke around being the anti-cotton sock company. And then it was like, oh, we'll be the anti-cotton clothing company. And it was like, we're not going to be a clothing company at all. We're not even going to associate ourselves with fashion. Like, we just want to make really good, reliable things. And we want consumers to understand the reason that we make them. And we believe that if those two things are true, they'll make the right choice on their own.
So are you saying that it might not be Warn purely doing apparel forever?
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we try to hold the clothing and the apparel to a different standard, right? Like we try to look at it as a piece of gear, and it's not associated with fashion in the sense of like, what is this year's color going to be? Because if we introduce what is this year's color going to be, we're making more crap, and more crap is not sustainable. So what we do is we create one really, really, really amazing base layer, and you create one or two really, really amazing boxer cuts, and you create one really, really, really amazing mid layer, and you make it in two or three colors, and it lasts for 15 years, and that's what it does, and that's its job, right? It's not turning over a convenient accessory. It's not that mantra, and it takes a little longer to get that to market, and it takes a little longer to get that to catch. But the people that are choosing it, you know, are the people that are going to stay with you. So it seems worth it.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500, yes, 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Brian, are you ready for the top tips?
Sure.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take a Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I'd have to say Shoe Dog, the Nike look back. One, it's really well written and it holds up. But two, the mentality that he brought, he said business is just war with money instead of bullets. And, you know, a lot of earlier or newer generations don't want to hear that kind of stuff. And it sounds really severe and dramatic, but the reality is like you are looking to fortify, you are looking to be reliable. You do want to be here for 10 or 20 or 30 years. And when you look at it as a resource management problem and not as a brand problem, you really start to feel differently about your business and you start to make better choices. So, well, his whole aspect of war may be a little bit too dramatic and, you know, that's fine. I think taking the resource management that he points out in the book is a valuable lesson.
Top recommendation. Okay. Traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Your real analytics. Every single marketing person out there is trying to tell you that their tool works and none of them have reliable analytics. So the first thing that you need to do is back out and make sure that your entire pipeline is 100% as true and reliable and simple as you can get it. You need to know where your net new conversions are coming from. You need to know where your repeat revenue conversions are coming from. You need to know what those costs are. You need to know whether they're scalable, and all of that is so much more important than the channel you choose. Because if you do it that way, you're doing test and learn. Like you might try Facebook and it might work for you for a little while. It might not. You might try building a Facebook Klaviyo funnel and there's, okay, so we can get into the complexities of it very, very, very quickly. But it's okay to go out and try different things for 3 months at a time and have them fail as long as you can point to your own math and say, look, this is why it failed and move on. It's not okay to be growing and not know how much it's costing you. That sounds like a crazy concept, but that data can get so easily lost in the P&L. You need it to exist in your attribution. And I would say the most important thing you need is attribution analytics.
And Brian, can I ask are you willing to share what tools you're using to make that possible? Because I think that's where a lot of people are getting stuck at the moment, is what where they should actually look for that true source of data.
100%. So I want to just say the true source of data is going to come from you comparing multiple sources. There's no way around it, and it's a bummer, but it is important. And that said, you can get a lot of help from things like Black Crow AI. You can get a lot of help from Triple Whale. We've been using Triple Whale for about 2 years now. And, you know, Google Analytics, I would say, is the most honest attribution source that we've seen when we compare it against third party. It is always within 2 or 3% of reality. You know, some of that information is going to get harder to get as cookie changes and those things come through. So anyway, that's something you want to be aware of. But yeah, Triple Whale has been great. And just to that point, like, we use it and we have that data on screen right next to the Facebook data, right next to TikTok data, right? Whatever the channel might be, we use like a first click attribution, just determine what your attribution is going to be and stick with it. You know, everybody's got their own reason they choose what they choose, and that's up to you, but stick with it over a long term. And then we pull the information right out of Shopify. And there's one report at the end of the month that has like the ROAS by channel, but it's each self-reported series of channels right next to each other. And three of them are always very, very similar. And one of them is always off on its own. Did you guess which one that's off on its own all the time?
I couldn't possibly guess. Does it begin with an M and end with a T? End with an A even?
It does.
So that, just to clarify, that spreadsheet, you report what Meta tells you, what TikTok tells you, what Google Ads tells you, et cetera, and you're also looking at what Triple Whale's telling you and what Google Analytics is telling you, so you can work out what it's likely to, the reality is likely to be by looking at each of those different things.
Yes, that's exactly true. And that sounds like a lot to do. And it's actually not. It's just in the beginning, each time you add an analytics setup or you add a channel, make sure that you're collecting the information. You can bring it over into a Google Sheet very easily, right? Like, there's tools that will help this populate for you very easily. And, you know, it's just being organized and making sure you keep that thing up to date. But if you do it, you know, month one, it's not telling you a lot. Month six, it is telling you some stuff. Month 12, you're going to know some things for sure. So just start, keep it simple, and keep the comparison real.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that bit, Brian. Okay, we are supposed to be in the quick fire top tips round now, so I better go and we'll ask you some questions. The next top tip is the tool top tip. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool that you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
I am an ADD person, and I struggle with like having my screen open and emails blip up or whatever it is. And then I go down a time rabbit hole. So I've got one of those little timers that you have like for your oven, and I put it on my desk. And if I have got to crank out emails, or I've got to crank out a campaign or write an ad camp or whatever it may be, like do a production order, that's on calendar. I time box it on calendar, and that timer is on my desk, and that's it. And I can see it. I don't go back to the real world until that timer is up, because then I actually get a task done, and that is helpful.
I love that. Simple, real world, but incredibly effective. I'm sure that will help a lot of people. Brian, the last top tip is the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
Make products that last longer.
It would have been so wrong if you hadn't said that, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah, it would have been against our own mantra.
But it is the fundamental bit, isn't it?
It is. And I believe it was Yvonne Chouinard who said, the product you love the most is the one that is the most sustainable. And what he meant by that was, people love it because it works, because it lasts a long time, because it solves a problem. And like, when you solve the problem, people don't go out and look for a new solution. And every time they go out and find a new solution, they're creating a new footprint. Everything you bring home and add to the house is a new footprint. Every time you redo anything and you try to solve a problem a third, a fourth, and a fifth time, you're eating up that footprint. You're expanding that footprint. And that mentality shift of better, fewer is what's going to win.
Oh, so true. Brian, you have been brilliant. Before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social, please?
Yeah, of course. You can find us at www.warnbrand.com. you can use a discount code of just WARN2020 for your first purchase if you want to give them a shot. And if you ever want to reach out or you have questions as a founder, you can reach me at marvel@warrenbrand.com. A lot of people made time for me to have chats with me, and so I make time to have chats with others as well. And just remember that the other founders are the most empathetic people out there, and they're all trying to solve it. And it's a good group to rely on when things are difficult, because they can be.
Brian, thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Master Plan podcast and for being so generous sharing your experience with us. I'm sure you've helped an awful lot of our listeners. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Some brilliant lessons there from Brian. If you are looking at growing your business at the moment, I think the couple of ones I wrote down was your inventory is your first employee. Got to be able to pay the inventory. Can't not pay the inventory. Build a small hot fire. I thought that was so clever. One hot fire. Keep feeding that fire rather than trying to start another one. I thought that was such a good way of thinking about how to grow an e-commerce business successfully right now. The most exciting e-commerce brands, D2C brands I'm speaking to at the moment, are the ones who are really getting their stuff right. Building the right foundations, building the right product, working out what marketing's working by building their analytics information, like Brian was outlining how they do theirs. Yes, it takes some time to build it, but it will pay off so much if you understand what your numbers are. Lots and lots of good advice there. And of course, your product has to perform. You need a stellar product. Otherwise, the whole thing will fall apart sooner or later. Really love chatting to Brian. You can get your hands on the notes from this episode, including the top tips and links to what we mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast. Or you can use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/episode number into the URL bar and you'll be redirected straight to the right episode page. When you get to the website, you can add yourself to our email list, and please do so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business, like our e-commerce explored webinar series. If you liked this episode, then you can catch all our fashion episodes at ecmp.info/fashion, or scroll back up. And I know Brian's an apparel business, not a fashion business, but we call it fashion. So hopefully he'll excuse me from that if he's listening. And if you want more on D2C, then ecmp.info/D2C would be the place to go. Thank you so much for tuning into this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with their businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Hope you have a great week, and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
It's time to download our 500 top tips to make your e-commerce business more profitable ebook. Go to ecmp.info/ebook now.